When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of Band Biographies. You can find more episodes at bandbiographies.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-D biographies.com. If you enjoy it, why not leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts? Apparently, it helps get the show up the charts so more people can see it, to download it, and then to leave further 5-star reviews. Another way you can help is by telling as many friends as possible to give it a download. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, on Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. But most of all, enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to Band Biographies with me, your host, Tom Austin Morgan. Band Biographies is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network of music-based podcasts. Be sure to visit pantheon.com to find a whole host of different types of show on all sorts of music. It's an honour to be placed amongst such brilliant shows. Today, I present an interview with Jason Potbelly, the co-lead vocalist, guitarist and driving force behind Washington-based punk band Potbelly. The band has been around and touring since 1995 and has built up quite the community by producing split EPs and compilation albums with a plethora of well-known and unsigned bands over the years, as well as relentlessly touring around North America. In fact, they've released over 100 recordings over the years, so much so that, as you'll hear, even Jason can't remember the names of them all. They're finally coming over to the UK this summer, and I'll be playing with them at their first show in London in July with my band Swamp Stomper. More details on that when it's confirmed, for sure. Jason has so many stories, from seeing the cream of the Seattle grunge scene play tiny venues and house parties in the 80s and 90s, through to insights about the political environment of the US and the crazy goings-on in his area during COVID. I'm really excited for you to hear it. You can find Potbelly by visiting pig-record.rocks/potbelly and on Facebook, as well as on Bandcamp and other streaming sites. If you search for them, look for the logo with the scary-looking cartoon pig. But without further ado, here's my interview with Jason Potbelly of the band Potbelly. Jason Potbelly from the band Potbelly, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, glad to be here. And, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Just a quick kind of catch-up thing. You were on tour recently in Costa Rica, so let's talk about that first. How was Costa Rica at this time of year?
I love Costa Rica. It's their dry season right now, so it's really nice. There's we got very little rain. It was just like little drizzles. The west side of everything, the Pacific side, is absolutely amazing. The east side's a lot more humid, so it's a little harder to deal with. But overall, I mean, the shows were great. The people were really cool. And the second show we played was at this mountain pass and on a property and a clubhouse, so they can't, so they can do what they do there without charging admission and getting away with throwing shows. It's very, old school squatty kind of thing. But the highway had literally broken away from the rains, so I didn't think anyone was gonna go. We got there, but it was like there was one lane in this huge section and massive traffic, and I didn't think there was gonna be anybody there. I was like, and it turned out to be a really good show. People were like literally parked at the bottom of the hill walking up this mountainside to get to this fucking show. I mean, that's sheer dedication. In Washington, they'd be like, I'll see him next time.
That tends to be the way, though, doesn't it? I mean, I was on tour last year over in Europe, and we were driving to this place in Czechia, And we were driving for hours off the highway. Like we were hours and hours into the country, like out into the fog, down these country roads, just fields on either side. And we turned up to this village and there was just a hall there. And we were like, where the fuck are we? Like, who is coming to this gig? And it was one of the most packed gigs of the tour. It was nuts. People came from like Prague and all over the place to come down. They'd come like 100 miles to come to the gig. It's incredible. Sometimes those ones where you turn up and you look at the venue and you're like, nah, nothing's happening here. They can be the best ones.
Oh, absolutely. Overall, for years, you never know what the best show on your tour is going to be, but we played many, many shows in the middle of fucking nowhere that turned out to be just great. I think it's, people are fucking bored there. Like where we're from, we live in a pretty small place. So the shows, they're not like the city. Like you go to Seattle, there's a show every night. Where we live, if there was a show every night, no one would show up because they'd be overexaggerated with how small of a amount of people that are there. So they're few and far between. They're like once every 6 weeks is a show, and because of that, they're pretty packed all the time. Where a band from like out of town or out of the country, like we had Raw Power out from Italy, right? They show up and like, what the fuck is this little town? You know what I mean? And there's a little bar, totally packed, great show, But so it's like you just never know where you're gonna end up being the like you think Los Angeles, that's gonna be great. It's actually, if you go to Panoma, the things like that really trip my brain out as far as populace versus crowd anticipation.
You can never predict it. And so how was the Costa Rica tour anyway? How long were you out there? How many gigs did you do?
Well, the I can't even call it a tour. I went out there a couple years ago with my wife and loved the country. Like I'm a big nature fan. I've seen the crazy amount of wildlife that's there. 3.5% of all living things on the planet live there. It's got 13 separate ecosystems in a place that's half the size of the state I live in. And so it's just incredible. You see stuff all fucking day long. And I kept telling my band that I want to go do it, but I didn't know any bands there. Like when I was there, I was in the villages and the jungle, and I didn't see any signs of fucking spiky-haired kids. I didn't think that it really existed, but I figured I'd look into it anyway. So I started researching online, just Facebooking it, punk bands in Costa Rica, and I came across a few random things and bands that had been broken up for years, and finally I got a hold of a band called Altercados, and they set it up. The biggest thing that we ended up doing, we were like, we looked at it like a vacation instead of a tour. So we're gonna book as many shows as we can, which isn't very many there, right? You know what I mean? And then the rest of the time we'll just be on vacation and see the ocean and go fucking hang out with poison dart frogs. So we only played a weekend warrior thing. We played a Friday in Heredia and a Saturday in Cardigal, and there was originally supposed to be a show in Jaco. But something happened with the promoters or whatever. So we ended up only doing two shows and being there for a week. So it was like, that's not really a tour. It's more of a weekend warrior thing in another country. But it was really quite awesome. And the people there are so, they're really responsive and really happy that you're there. They're very aware that there's not many bands coming there. So they've seen, it's like there's, a handful of bands from there. And they've fucking seen them, you know what I mean? So when a band comes through, they're like really grateful and really. I must have taken 100 photos with people. Can I take a picture with you? Oh, sure. Okay, like it was a fucking really good experience. I'd love to see that scene grow to a point where each city has its own thing, the way that we do, and that way you could go on a real tour there. As of right now, there's only like really five really populated places that you could maybe play. And we were able to figure out over a course of 4 months, only two shows, right? You know what I mean? So it's kind of a variable. And they set things up very differently than they do here. Whereas like whoever's throwing the show has to bring a PA, bring the lights, bring the production. It's like everyone that's putting on a show is a production team rather than a venue. We pull into a fucking bar in Seattle, there's already lights, there's already a fucking PA, there's already, you bring your shit, but there it's everyone uses the same gear. If you can't make their fucking orange amp sound good, then that's your fault. You know what I mean? Like the drummer plays on whatever drum set they have at the moment, which is funny because our drummer's got like this big fucking like ridiculous Iron Maiden like rock set, like
Really?
and it was like the little It was like this little beat up punk rock set. It was like, the one Tom, that thing. That's funny watching him go, okay, yeah, I can do this. But
Get creative
it
with
was
the
really great.
roles.
Yeah, and every band there was every single one of them were fucking tight as hell. They were all just like dead on solid on both shows. And we played with a total of like seven bands or something. And honestly, I'd tell you their names, but I'm really not that great at Spanish in the row. But there's some really great stuff though. I mean, it was just like immensely tight. Like you take like intricacy of classical metal type guitar players and shit and compress it into NOFX sounding punk rock, and it's just like solid as fuck,
That sounds pretty cool, man. I mean, how many countries has Potbelly been to over the years?
just the United States, Canada, Mexico, and Costa Rica.
Okay,
Us doing
right.
the we've done a lot of US touring, very little Mexico, and we go up to Canada. We live about 2.5 hours from Canada, so we go through time to time play. And that's cool. That place has got a good scene too. Vancouver, BC's got a really great scene.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where is that where Pooza Fest is? Is that what that takes place, or is that, am I thinking Ontario?
I'm not, yeah, maybe Ontario. I'm not,
Yeah.
yeah, we never played the East Coast of it. Everything's been on the West Coast. I just know Vancouver and Victoria. Like we're playing there in March with the Day Glo Abortions. We played there a couple times with them. But there's like, it's a good scene there. It's like everyone's kind of just, it's like where DOA is at and fucking where SNFU is at. And, it's like you just show up and before Chai died, you just see him at our shows randomly, like you just, due to the crowd, because that's where he fucking lives, and the
That's
Day
pretty
Glo
cool.
abortions are always on fucking top of things.
Yeah,
So.
definitely. So, before, I mean, you guys have been playing together since 1995, right? And so, kind of before that, were there other bands that you were in, or was this like, this was the band, these were the four friends? Because Whidbey
This.
Island's quite a small place, right?
Yes, it is. It's series of small towns, and they're all small towns. So I in 1990 or 91 I met Jeff there, and me and him started jamming together a little bit. I hadn't heard from him for a little while, and one day he just called me and said, there's this thrash metal band that's looking for a vocalist and a drummer, and that's kind of new or whatever. And you want to try out? And I was like, well, there's fucking literally no punk scene there at this point, right? I like metal too, so I'm like, sure, I'll go try it out. So me and him tried out, and we both made it. So we started playing in that band. Well, through that band, we met a band called Grumblethorpe. It was kind of a crossover band, and that was Ken Ball and Curtis J's band. And they broke up, and I quit Zen. And me and Ken and Curtis from Grumblethorpe started Potbelly in 95. Curtis quit in 96, and Jeff from Zen then joined Potbelly. And we've gone through a lot of member changes and stuff, but that's just kind of how it started. It was like two different bands that were like playing together all the time. Grumblethorpe wasn't Ken and Curtis's band. That was a band they joined. And Zen was a band that me and Jeff joined. So it was like other writers, and it was fun for what it was, but it wasn't our thing. And we wanted to do something on our own. And by the time the end of 94 happened, we were all talking about it a whole bunch, and finally practices started happening, and here we are.
Because I suppose as well, like, you're under the shadow of Seattle, which is not far away, and I suppose at that time it was the grunge explosion was happening. So was that ever a path that you wanted to go down, or was that not really
No, I
your
mean,
scene?
I know people in that scene. The thing about Washington State in general, really the Northwest in general, but Washington State is it's really kind of a homegrown rock and roll thing. I mean, there's a lot of places in the world that I know are like more tribal. People are like, we play punk rock, we play metal, we hate each other, or rock and roll, whatever. And we're not like that here for the most part. We just, I mean, musicians are musicians. We all kind of know each other from school, from partying. It's all so small. It's all consolidated that like Duff McKagan, who played it in Guns N' Roses, right? He's from here, right? So we know him from the Farts and from 10 Minute Warning and from the punk bands he was in back in the day, right? Or like the Seattle scene, you know, Mike McCready used to fucking just hang out all the time from Pearl Jam before he became a rock star. But it's like, you know, it's all kind of just grown and you know, so we all know each other. And some bands, yeah, some bands I don't like the same way I like others, sure. But as far as being a unified rock and roll unit of scene, we're all kind of together. You know, there's no, especially in little places like where we live, there's no picking and choosing who's going to be at your show or what band you play with. There's fucking nine bands, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, so it kind of goes all over the place. There's, you know, the punk bands play with the metal bands, the rock bands, the ska bands, you know, whoever pops up. And as long as everybody's fucking good people, we don't give a fuck, you know? So no, the grunge thing was not my scene, but I was definitely around it a lot. I was at a party that Lane Staley got beat up. You know what I mean? Like, life happens. And just because one guy's on the radio doesn't mean he's not in the same neighborhood as me. You know?
So, what were kind of some of the bands that you saw around that time that went on to be big then?
A lot of them. I saw Nirvana at a house party on the Ave in Seattle, 1988 or 89 when I was a kid, opening up to the Melvins. I had no idea who the fuck they were. I was just going to go see the Melvins. Soundgarden, saw them a couple of times in the O Metro K era at the in Seattle at the, what the fuck was the name of that place? OK Hotel. And you know, and then I had like some of the punk bands that were also like The Accused, for instance. Like they were kind of connected with all those bands too, because of Duff from Guns N' Roses was in the farts with Blaine from The Accused. And then you have the guys that were in Tad that started playing with 10 Minute Warning, Blaine's band after that. And it was just all kind of intertwined. So you'd see a lot of those bands before they started getting huge, or members that would quit a band and eventually go on to be a rock star in some other band. You know, it was just kind of the scene at that point. Again, a lot of the grungier, rockier stuff isn't really my cup of tea. You know, it is good for what it is, just not for me that much. But you were kind of intertwined. The unfortunate part about it was that the record industry became too industry in Seattle, and then they started shutting down a lot of the things that weren't that. You know what I mean? So bigger promoters, you know, like, oh, Kiss is gonna play. Who's gonna open up for them? Not you. You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of one of those things. You know what I mean? But I mean, the outskirts, you got to get away from Seattle. Fuck Seattle for a minute and get into like Everett. Everett's got a fucking massive history that nobody knows about of hardcore bands and punk bands dating back to the early 80s. The entire North Sound of Puget Sound. It's like every time you see a documentary about punk rock in the Northwest, they're always like, they hit Seattle, right? They talk about it for a minute. Or they hit Portland, they hit Seattle, then they skip right the fuck over everything, go to Vancouver with DOA. But there's like this huge, massive amount of history from past that little spot that nobody really knows. You know, bands like the Dehumanizers, that fucking just totally killed it through the 80s. You know, like fucking again, The Accused, but they went on to be rock stars for a little while, right? Like, you know, dumped positively negative. The list is really big of bands that went were real influential in our area, and only we know who they are. You know.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I suppose geographically, America's so huge that there can be these pockets, and especially kind of pre-internet as well.
Oh yeah.
There were things going on that probably never got out of the neighborhood, you know, or the town that they were in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And this is what I love talking to people about, is like their local areas and their local scenes and the stories that you don't hear about so often, you know.
Right.
So were you, obviously, you after a while, I suppose Seattle was kind of a no-go for playing shows. It was the outskirts then for you guys.
Well, we it's not like we didn't play Seattle. It was just that the punk scene in Seattle started really dwindling with the all ages stuff. There's all kinds of problems with ordinances and shit at the time too, which kind of started killing the all ages scene, unfortunately, and started pushing bands more towards the bars and the all ages bands away from Seattle. And I mean, it was a real problem during that time period
Because
in
that was a
Seattle with
big deal.
that,
Like,
you
there
know,
was a
like
big, I think the kind of, it was a bit like the LA scene as well in that area. It was quite, was it quite violent?
well, sometimes, but you know, I don't know. I've seen violence at shows many times, but most of the time I don't. You know what I mean? And that's kind of a given, no matter where you're at, I think, probably. You know, I mean, where we're from, there's not a lot of violence at shows, though fights do happen every once in a while. You know, when you know when some neo-fascist Nazi guy shows up, I'll kick the shit out of you. I don't give a fuck. So, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's probably best for them not to show up. You know what I mean? But as far as like everyday violence, yeah, it happens sometimes. You know, some idiot drunk friends getting a fight or whatever. I mean, that happens. But I haven't, it's pretty rare that something extraordinarily violent happens in Washington at a show. You know, I it's happened. We played a show in Seattle where someone got fucking beat half to death outside with a baseball bat. You know, I mean, the things do happen, but it's rare. I mean, I've been doing this since 1989, you know, like, and I haven't seen that many horrible things when it comes to shows, you know.
I think it was more
But
like the 80s and maybe into the early 90s, but I like I say, I don't know whether that's the case. It's possible that there was probably more violent in LA because of the gang kind of culture down there as well. Because I know there were kind of punk gangs in LA as well, weren't there?
There was a lot of that actually. But I mean, that's just the life they had to live and the poverty stricken place they were at. You know what I mean? It's that's the unfortunate thing about people when they're hungry enough, you know, they're
Unfortunately.
gonna do what they can to feed their families. And desperate people have to do desperate things sometimes. You know, I mean, it's a fucking ongoing thing. I wish them all luck and then they can get out of that culture, but it's you know, it is what it is, you know. I know if I couldn't feed my fucking kid, I'd be doing what I have to, you know.
Exactly. Everybody, you got to survive, right? It's you or them, isn't it? You know, so, but so growing up, was guitar the instrument for you, or have you played other instruments as well? Like, was your household particularly musical?
My dad was a is a guitar player. He was really into like anything from blues to bluegrass as far as playing. He got me into music at an early age, with bands like Kiss and Alice Cooper and Frank Zappa and Black Sabbath, those kind of things. And my mom was really into the easier version of that, like Elton John, things like that. So I was really, I've just been around it my whole life, you know. And when the 80s happened, my aunt who lived with us was a little younger than my mom, a little older than me. She was really into everything because she's a teenager at that point, you know. And during the 80s, it was like a lot of like the hair metal bands, shit like that. And slowly into punk rock. So I went to a lot of those shows. I mean, you can pretty much name any fucking hair metal butt rock band. I've probably seen them, you know, when I was a kid, going with my aunt or my mom when I was little. And then, you know, then I started. It's funny because I got turned on to punk more by seeing metal bands wearing punk rock t-shirts and wondering what it was. You know, like he's wearing a Misfits shirt. What is that? Or a Ramone shirt, you know, and that's what slowly got me into that, I guess. I mean, I think the first punk song I heard was God Save the Queen from the Sex Pistols, and that was definitely it from my aunt. But as I progressed and started learning things on my own, I obviously discovered a whole world that I didn't know existed, you know.
So that's a pretty decent base to start from, is kind of, you know, Sabbath, Zeppelin, Zappa. Even Elton John, you know, it's a good little playing field there, and then onto the hair metal stuff. What was, I suppose, you know, when you started learning guitar, what was the song that you heard that made you think, well, I want to play that guitar riff, and B,
Interesting.
was there another song that made you think, well, maybe I can do that as a living?
No, it was never like that. It was more just like I had, and I still do. I always have. It's like a curse and a blessing at the same time. I have melody in my head all the time. I hear notes and the wheels on your car turning. I can't get away from music. It's all there at all times, and it's been there since I was a child. So because of that, I never really set out to learn somebody else's material. I learned, my dad would show me songs, like I learned a CCR song, right? That kind of thing when I was a
Yeah.
kid. But that wasn't necessarily because I wanted to learn that particular song. It was because I wanted to learn how to play that instrument.
Right.
And I started writing almost immediately. Like as soon as I started fucking around with strings, I started figuring things out and writing shitty songs that progressed into something better. But there was never like a song that was like, I need to learn that song. That's the one. It was more just like, I have these things in my fucking head that I need to get out. And that was my way of doing it.
How do I make that sound with this instrument?
Yes, exactly.
So what about your, it sounds like you had a pretty decent record collection at home, but what was the first single or album that you bought with your own money? Because these are often where we find out where the true pop fan lives.
Iron Maiden Killers. I
Okay,
was really young,
that's pretty
and I
good.
hadn't, and honestly, I hadn't even heard the album. My uncle had a poster of it, and when I was really little, as what year was that? Like 1981 or something, 1982, something like
Around there, yeah, I'm sure it is, yeah.
that. Yeah, and I was born in 77, so that puts me pretty young at that point, right? When I was
Yeah.
little, that fucking record cover scared the shit out of me, right? It was like, what is this? So when I got to a point where I was appreciating music on my own, and rather than just being around it, I found that at the local record store on cassette and fucking bought it instantly.
I mean,
Word
Iron Maiden's
out.
album covers are just some of the best out there. They've got the most
Oh
iconic looking mascot in Eddie. And you nicked that as well for Potbelly, right? You did the Swiller, We're Still Swillers album.
We did. We did. That's wonderful parody. Don't sue me, guys. Don't sue me.
Yeah, I'm sure they're listening. But yeah, it's like you say, they're so iconic looking, those album covers. And I can totally see why that kind of would attract like a younger teen. Like, were you a teenager at that point or even preteen?
Preteen. I was
Yeah.
probably like 11 or something.
Yeah. It's kind of that it's like a comic book, right? They all look like comic books. And it's
For
exciting.
sure.
So, what about the kind of live aspect of it? Like, when did you start playing live? Were you straight out the gate? I mean, obviously, you'd been playing with those metal bands previously. How long were you in those?
Okay, so in 1989, there was a kid band that was starting up. No one really knew how to play instruments. They were all in the sixth grade, called Salvation. And they asked me to sing for them. They thought they were going to be a metal band. They were a bunch of metalhead kids, fucking, but they weren't anywhere near good enough to be a metal band. So really, they were more of a sloppy proto punk band
Right,
that
yeah.
was, and so I did. We practiced all the time because none of us knew how to play fucking anything. We were all awful. And I wasn't playing guitar for them. I was just singing. We played one party in 1989, and that was the extent of that. I think we played like six songs. One of those songs, Hick from Cootville, ended up living with me. It's on a Potbelly record, and I ended up re-recording it with that band, with our band, years and years and years later. But then Zen came around, and I was in that band from 92 to 94. And then Potbelly, I joined a pop punk band that needed a bass player called Schizo in Everett, Washington. So I'd commute over for practice for that for a while. But that was very short-lived. And then the whole starting Potbelly thing happened. So it's like I just kind of went from boom, 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 all the way through it. So I've been doing it pretty much since 1989. I mean, really since 1992 when Zen thing happened, because the 89, 90 Salvation thing was very short-lived, and played one show and never put out a record. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
but yeah, I did I haven't stopped. I mean, then I've played in a bunch of side project bands too, over the years. Me and my wife were in a band together called the Porn Stars of Horror. And that band was supposed to put out one record and do a couple shows, and it ended up being fucking 10 records in 5 years. You know what I mean? And so it's just been a roller coaster the whole time. I mean, I'm 46 now, and I started playing when I was 12. So it's a lot of years of it.
Lot of experience. And I suppose what would you say has changed the most in the kind of in organizing tours and gigs in the in that time period? Because I assume,
Okay.
early days it's the kind of looking in the phone book and trying to organize a gig via maps and whoever has got the contacts for such and such a city.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, it was where we lived, we'd had to rent halls, or there was no bar or venue on Whidbey Island. So we'd have to rent the IOOF halls and the Eagles lodges and things like that, and put on our own shows. Or we throw house parties. The house parties were a huge thing for a long time. And then when it came around to Potbelly, was the first band I started touring with. And our first tour was absolutely awful. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And I've been, since the beginning, I've been the guy that's trying to set everything up and do everything. I do all the work. So at Potbelly, when we first started touring, our first tour was in 97 or 98, somewhere in there. And it was all Book Your Own Fucking Life. I don't know if you remember that magazine, but there was a magazine that published that it was just like, it had every promoter, every club, it was like, some people were legit, some people just put their shit in there because they're fucking assholes. I don't know. You're basically just looking at these big giant maps and looking at these promoters and calling each one of them and sending records through the mail or cassettes at the time or whatever the fuck we had. And so it was a lot harder to keep track of, right? Like today, you just go online. Are they doing their job? Is there fucking flyers up? Is there, is there an event page? You know what I mean? But then it was like, you're just at the mercy of whoever the fuck is doing your shows, but those early days, you saw a lot of cool stuff though. It was like fucking like playing in a basement with AFI. You know what I mean? Before they were a big band, or things like that, or playing at a high school auditorium with gutter mouth. You know what I mean? Like, there's like, there's random weird shit that happened back then. Because of those things, because no one knew what the fuck they were doing. No one, and at that time, a lot of those bigger bands that are, big punk bands now weren't big punk bands then. And they were doing the same thing we were doing. They're looking to Book Your Own Fucking Life and fucking calling us, and we were calling them. And it was a lot of there's some cool things that happened because of it. There's also just like a lot of like, drive for fucking 9 hours to find out the show's not actually happening. Shit. You know what I mean? That did happen a couple of times.
That's so
Yeah.
I mean, I've been reading
Fucking.
a lot of books. I listen, I watch a lot of documentaries and stuff at the moment. I just finished reading Bad Religion's Do What You Want book, and
Yeah.
I'm reading NOFX's The Hepatitis Bathtub at the moment, and
Yeah.
that's a fucking brilliant book. And
Poor Mike and his daughter. Poor Mike's poor daughter. Like,
I know. I just think of like everything that he said ever, and oh God. But like that, it just sounds like, I know that obviously there must be a bit of kind of nostalgic looking back and kind of romanticizing that period of time, but it really does seem like the Wild West in a way. Like it was just people with no clue of what they were doing, but
Oh, yeah.
somehow these nationwide tours were done, and like Christ knows how it happened, without technology. How did how are you supposed to function without a phone, without Google Maps? Do you know what
Yeah, it was yeah, if you talk to a young band today, they look at you like you're an alien when it comes to that particular subject matter, for sure. And those times where like, oh wait, this map looks like this is a shortcut, and you start driving down, you're like, oh no, I'm on the Oregon Trail. It's not a shortcut at all.
But no, I can imagine, driving, because the drives are killer out there. That's the thing that I think
Oh
us
yeah.
Brits don't really understand, because like everything here is within an hour of the next thing.
Yeah, no, it's not here. The fucking Washington State's massive, and that's just one state. We have to drive through wastelands to get to the next gig. It's just fucking 6, 7, 9, 10 hour drives, between everything. If you play in like just going cross country, You'll play a show every night, but every single day you're driving at least 7 hours. It's just fucking how it is. You get used to it, though it wears you out. The older you get, the harder it is, but we keep doing it somehow.
Because it's just what you know, I suppose. Like you say, you do get used to it. It's tiring, but the end product, actually getting up on stage of a night and playing for an hour and a half or whatever it is, an hour, is totally worth it. Despite probably not making enough money to make it back in some cases. But yeah, I can
Oh
imagine
yeah,
it
you
was
never know what you're gonna get. Yeah.
especially in the old days.
Yeah.
So
That's another
I'm
thing too, is some countries I noticed that some like the standard set list time for bands in Washington State is a half an hour to 45 minutes in the
Yeah.
United States, right? Where a lot of places it's an hour. Some places an hour and a half. If I try to play an hour and a half as fast as we are, I'd fall over dead.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Yeah, you guys play fast and you play hard by the sounds of it. I mean, I've listened to a bunch of your stuff. I haven't been able to listen to all of it because there's a lot of it out
There's
there.
a lot. Yeah, there's a
But
lot.
I've listened to what's available on, Apple and Bandcamp and stuff. And there's certainly elements of bands like Dead Kennedys, especially in the lead vocalist voice.
Oh,
And
yeah, me and Ken, the bass player, we switch off. Yeah.
Yeah, there's kind of Dead Kennedys, there's kind of Bad Religion, but faster. There's a bit of metal in there as well. I can hear that influence coming through. Like, what were your particular influences as a guitarist, and kind of what bands have kind of influenced and shaped the sound of Potbelly?
Oh, that's a That's a wide range of stuff.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's like, okay, so guitar player wise, RKL for sure is a big one. Rich Kids and LSD, fucking yeah. The Accused, which is on the other side of the spectrum, more metally, right? Mm. Bad Religion for sure, with a lot of the vocal work, the harmonies.
Yeah.
Millions of Dead Cops with the intensity for sure, with the fast DRI, that kind of stuff, real crossover, fast hardcore was a big thing. The Circle Jerks was a big one.
Mm.
But I could just keep going. I mean, yeah. the list goes on. You can go like Cox Bar, fuck yes. On the other hand, the metal side, Exodus, fuck yes. You know, I could just, you know, like, so you just take all these elements and I don't know how to say, I think music always shapes you, you know, like I can't say that there's an influence that was more than another from a childhood to the time I am now, because still to this day, I see a new band that can influence me in some way, musically, or their stage presence, some harmonies they're doing, or a guitar, little fucking DTD, they did a little noodling, you know, like it's always there. So, I don't think that I can't just pinpoint it. I guess I could go off on my top 500 bands if you want, but you know what I mean? But that's a big fucking list, and they're all over the place.
You know? Yeah, sure. I've always thought that's the best way to be, is kind of be open with your music taste and take in elements from everywhere, because then you'll pick up, like you say, little bits from everywhere, which makes you sound more unique, because you're kind of bringing in bits from metal as well as hardcore punk and pop punk and shoving it all in mm-hmm. a blender, and you become a more rounded musician, I think, as well.
Right. Let's see what happens when we take the Specials and Exodus and put them together. Yeah. What the fuck is that? I don't know. Let's try it.
It's one of my favorite things to do. And also, I suppose, you know, politics is kind of front and center in a lot of the songs. I mean, a lot of the albums and a lot of the song titles are funny and aggressive at the same time, you know.
Right.
And I guess, like, and as well as the artwork is kind of cartoony with the kind of pig mascot and stuff. So do you take having fun seriously, or are you serious but you want to stick a bit of fun on top? Like,
I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
I think there's been times where I was dead serious about a lot of things and had something to say. Mm. And then times that all those things that I was saying was pissing me off too much, so I had to write something funny.
Sure.
To make it, to break the monotony, make me feel a little better, right? I mean, I use comedy as a defense mechanism. I always have. Mm. And you can see that in lyric writing. Yeah. I don't mean the satirical, funny part things. It's not something that I'm... It's comedy to me, those things. Whereas a song like Throw the Brick is very fucking serious, right? You know, so yeah, I try to throw in some humor. Maybe it's just that's kind of my personality, maybe, you know, like it's our personalities. We're a bunch of fun loving people, you know what I mean? But we're also pissed about things, you know? So maybe it's just, you know, I mean, when you're in the same band since you were 17, you're almost 50, it's the best part of you and the worst part of you is well documented, you know? Mm. And I think that that's pretty noticeable in the songwriting. You'd be like, it was a time where I said something that pissed people off. So I'm like, oh, fuck you then. I'll just double down on that and piss you off and start writing some stupid shit that just, it's going to make you mad. They're going to freak out. Rah! I'm going to go all full dwarves on this one. And then, you know, then I'm like, okay, well, I'm calmed down now. You know, settle down my ADHD a little bit. Okay. Now it's time to write about something that pisses me off in real life. You know, like, so I think it's kind of gone every direction with that.
I think punk rock is the kind of perfect place to be able to do that as well. Like both the aggressive kind of heartfelt and serious thoughts, but also with a twist of, I suppose bands like NoFX, for example, do that perfectly. You know, they lampoon the left and the right and themselves mm-hmm. and everyone else. And, you know,
yeah.
You know, I think they're the masters of it, actually. But yeah, certainly, like some of the song titles that stuck out to me were stuff like "Revenge of Fuckface the Pig," for example. Or, but yeah, there's a bunch of titles like that that just made me smile. And then you listen to them, and you kind of you're making out the lyrics, and yeah, it's just I've really become a bit of a fan, really. I'm quite looking forward to the fact. I mean, the reason that we're talking today is because you reached out on like a local Facebook site to do with music in the southeast of England, and I answered, and took up the call. So hopefully, at some point, we'll be playing together in the next few months over here. So this is going to be your first time over in the UK, right?
Yep, first time. It's expensive to get over there, man. I am surprised at how expensive it is to set up shows in that area, really. And maybe it's just because there's such a cultural hub there. People, bands fucking constantly getting hold of every promoter. So like, okay, well, if we got to pencil you in, that means that there's got to be a, you know, down payment from whatever promoter and blah, blah. That's not how it works here, right? So it's a little different for me as far as booking. Yeah. But yeah, we'll be there in July for sure. 100%. It's happening. We've got enough shows actually lined up to where I know that it's happening. So we're just trying to get a few other dates filled in. And, you know, I want to do all of the UK if I can. I want to do England and Wales and Scotland and Ireland. I want to do all of it.
So what shows have you got definitely lined up at the moment then?
Oh, fuck. I don't have anything in front of me at the moment.
Don't worry if you don't have the information. But I know for definite there's going to be a London gig at one of the Signature Brew venues.
Yes. Yeah, I know that one. That's the first show on the tour.
Yeah, so it'll be off the plane straight to the venue.
Pretty much.
Are you planning on having any downtime at all, or is it just, it's just over here and it's going to be one a night kind of thing?
It's just gonna be one a night and go. I mean, luckily again, most of the places are pretty close. I think the longest drive is like fucking Northern England to Scotland, and that's like 3.5 hours.
Yeah,
you know. So, and we're used to 5 to 9 hour days every time we go on tour. So, so that's nothing for us. We could sightsee a little bit while we're at places and go to record stores and get pissed off. I don't have any money on me, and yeah. Give hand jobs to the homeless to get a little money to get my record stores.
There's enough of them over here, sadly enough. So it won't be difficult because much like I'm sure your government, our government is fucking this place over something stupid at the moment.
God, so. I'm not even convinced they're not the same fucking government, to be honest. Like,
it might as well have been for the past 5 or 6 years, maybe more.
Yeah. Our government's fucked. There's no correct answer, you know. Yeah, right now we really are. We have the choices of you hear the lesser of the two evils fucking stereotype, but right now it really is just that. We had the choice of this fascist, neo-fascist, orange piece of shit, scumbag, sexist, homophobic fucking cocksucker, or a warmongering corporate piece of shit. Right. That's it. That's what we have.
Don't hold back, Jason. Tell us what you really think.
Fucking hate them. I hate them all. You know,
like you say, there's no right answer. Unfortunately, nothing is, nothing's kind of coming to the rescue by the seams of things. So it's got to be ground level, hasn't it? It's got to be the people looking after each other. It feels like, but where's the money for that coming from?
Fuck. Right. I mean, families are starting to move in together again. You know, the economy is just getting weirder and weirder. Things are getting better in some ways, and they way worse in others. You know, the housing market's ridiculous. I'm trying to rent a house, I'm renting an apartment right now for $2,300 a month. You know what I mean? Like, fuck is that? Yeah, really, in a small town, not even in the big city. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking ridiculous here. So because of that, you're seeing a lot more mom and dad move back into their kids, or, you know, the families consolidating again, which is it's great that they're taking care of each other, but it's awful that they have to, you know,
because I genuinely thought COVID was going to probably sort things out because it seemed like, I don't know how COVID was for you. I assume, you know, it was not exactly the easiest of times, but it seemed like community spirit lifted a little bit more, especially over here anyway. I don't know, like I say, what it was like over there. And it seemed like the idea was, you know, people finally started thinking about everyone like as a community and as a whole rather than as individuals. And I thought, well, maybe this is going to be the start of something better. And yeah, it's just, it's not happened. If anything, it swung right back across to like rampant, like capitalism again and yeah, price hikes and no waging. It's just, anyway.
Yeah, not here. I think it actually got worse. I think the Trump administration in general caused more divide in this country than I've seen in my lifetime than before. I mean, it didn't help that we had that piece of shit on TV saying that it was a fucking hoax all the time. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, these brainwashed fucking idiots driving around with big trucks with fucking flags on their back, on the back of them, fucking everywhere. Dressed in full camouflage, some of them walking around with rifles in the fucking their local Safeways, you know. Yeah. And it was very common for a minute there. That's what was happening, and they were purposely sneezing in each other's faces and shit. It's a Democrat hoax. It's a Democrat hoax, and they were repeating this fucking idiot's bullshit. And if anything, it created more divide in this country than ever before. We've always had divide here. Don't get me wrong. And we'll go back far enough. You know, you're talking about a country that was built on the backs of slaves and fucking completely fucking wiped out the populace that was here before it. There's always been bullshit because of this country. But in my lifetime, from the late 70s till now, this is the first time where I'm seeing like neo-fascists openly being neo-fascist. Why people are fighting against it and then getting ridiculed for fighting against it. Right. You know, you get them on the news and they start talking about how anti-fascists are now a terrorist group, you know, like what the fuck is that? Right. You know, like, and that's been happening since the Trump administration, but COVID doubled down on it.
That was the whole thing that all of a sudden, that move against Antifa, I had to start looking that up. I was like, have I got this wrong? Like Antifa being like a terror, like I had to literally look it up and was like, oh no, I am right. Like, this is just absolute bullshit, but it's amazing. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, the UK became a utopia during COVID. It certainly didn't. And we had our problems with lunatics and certainly divisions have become stronger since Brexit in 2016. And they were kind of widened a bit during COVID. But on the whole, it felt like things, you know, weren't quite so toxic. And yeah, the stuff coming out of America, like during, you know, a lot of it was Trump's speeches and things like that. And they always try and find the most extreme people to interview on the news, you know, to give their 2 cents.
Oh, yeah. And they're your fucking neighbors.
Yeah. I mean, it was that like the neo-fascists in their camouflage and the rifles. Was that happening in your area?
Oh yeah, massively. Yeah. Yep. Oh yeah. A lot. There's one idiot. I can't even make this shit up. Okay. You know, we'd see these, I don't know if you've had this problem where you're at, but we have the caravan of fucking gravy warriors, is what we call them. There's a bunch of fucking fat white dudes in camouflage driving around big trucks, right? They have all these big trucks and they all have these stupid fucking flags waving on the fucking back. And Trump won fucking American flags, whatever the fuck, Confederate flags, which is a weird combination to put together anyway. And fucking assholes. And so there's this dude that was walking around my neighborhood that didn't have a truck. He was poorer than the rest of them. So instead, he'd walk around in camouflage, full Teflon vests, 2 rifles, handguns, knives in his boots, with fucking flags sitting off his backpack. So he's walking around with these big dumb flags on his back because he didn't have his truck. This was common.
Wow.
You know,
I mean,
it's hard to explain.
I saw some things like on social media over here. I never witnessed anything too bad in real life. But again, as you say, people sneezing in each other's faces. There were people over here coughing and spitting into like the faces of store workers and stuff. And you're just like, how brainwashed do you have to be? That's the thing. Like, it wound me up. Yeah. So your COVID period, were you mainly at home? How did you manage to survive it? Were you guys okay?
I was home for a few months and then got back to work when the when I was able to be. But I mean, we had, as a band, we had a whole bunch of shows lined up that obviously got canceled. We were supposed to be over there at that time. Okay. We were supposed to do our first UK and Europe thing. Supposed to go to Indonesia. We had a bunch of stuff lined up, but it all got canceled, obviously. But so it was a blow. Like everybody else had to go through a blow, right? You know. But we doubled down and just started recording. That's when we did the Necessity of Rebellion album. We started recording it immediately. We're like, okay, well, fine, we're gonna be in the studio the whole fucking time. So we stayed busy that way. As far as actual work, you know, it was a couple months of unemployment, then back to it when we were able to work the part-time gigs or whatever with water masks and all that shit, you know.
So you weren't, you know, weren't stuck in your house having to watch the news because there was nothing else to do like some of us.
No, I mean, we were able to go outside and walk around and shit. We just, the most businesses were closed, so we weren't able to just, it's like you weren't going to go take your wife out to dinner, you know. What I mean, like, and public places were very discouraged upon going to, so a lot of the parks shut down and things like that. Luckily, I live in a Whidbey Island, and the surrounding area is basically just one big rainforest. So you can go down to the, you know, you hit some trails, go watch some fucking animals, do things like that. That, you know, I was able to do a lot of that, which is which is cool, you know. But you know, hike out of the mountains, go see some waterfalls, shit like that. You know, just nerd out in the woods. But that's pretty much it. You know, I was like, I had my band practices and studio time and playing in nature.
But being able to get out into nature, and especially into such kind of wild nature as there is there, it must have been quite, you know, quite something. Is that something that you do generally during your downtime anyway, or was it something that you kind of rediscovered?
I've been doing it. I mean, I'm, anyone from here knows their spots, you know. I'm surrounded by lakes and ocean, and, you know, on an island in the Puget Sound, you know, and then right past that is the mountain ranges, and there's shit everywhere here, you know. It's just, you know, you take it granted. You take for granted those things because you're so fucking used to them, you know. You see a tourist pull up and they're taking pictures of fucking deer. Like, why are they taking pictures of deer? They see them every day. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because they don't see them every day. You know what I mean?
No, it seems like a wonderful place to kind of grow up and live, actually. But yeah, like you say, you kind of become accustomed to what you're accustomed to, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just like me being in Costa Rica. I'm fucking tripping out. I'm like, look, poison dart frogs. People are like, yeah, whatever. You know, like.
So, because you released an album back in 2019 as well. So, like, was that early in 2019 or was it late in 2019? Then you couldn't play those, you know, you couldn't promote that.
Oh, that was Legacy Debauchery. No, we released that pretty early in 19. We did three tours for it. And then
it wasn't like we toured certain pretty good bands on that. You know, you released something at the end of 2019, had a couple of months, and then that was it for two or three years.
Yeah, no, we actually got back from tour not too long before the shutdown happened. So it was like we'd gotten back. Usually when we get back from tour, we take like 2 weeks off doing anything, just to fucking regroup and not, you know, we don't want to see each other for a minute. I'm stuck in a van for that long, you know, like, no practice. I'll see you in a couple of weeks, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We got back from tour and played three local shows, and then the shutdown happened. It was like we played with TSOL in Bellingham, Washington, played in Oak Harbor, and then played the Bremerton at the Charleston. And then it was like that the night of the Charleston was right after they said that no more than 200 people could be in a room together. So they had the clicker out and they let 200 people in out to house that night. But it was like, it was the first time that any of us saw people wearing masks and shit like that. And we didn't, you know, it was like, because it was so new and fresh, we didn't really know, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't a lot, the information wasn't there yet. It was just kind of like, oh, this thing's happening way away from us. And then all of a sudden it was like, it was there, and they shut everything down 2 days after that show. So everything got canceled after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I was playing up in London the day before the lockdowns were introduced, and we had a gig that the next weekend up in Camden, and we were kind of umming and ahhing as to whether to do it. And then all of a sudden we were told like no more public, you know, public performances, everyone's got to stay at home. So the decision was made for us. But yeah, it seemed like there was a strange transition period coming out of COVID with various lockdowns coming in and out and stuff. But how have you found gigs being, both from an audience perspective? Like, have you found audiences have changed at all since COVID, or have things kind of returned back to normal?
Yes and no. Okay, so the end of 2019, the scene here was at its height, I want to say. Mm-hmm. It had grown to the best place it's been in many years. Hundreds of people, you know, fucking really good shows. And then the COVID thing happened. Then when it stopped happening, when we started being able to go back to shows, it was a very slow crawl. You know, people were starting to come out, but the big crowds weren't yet.
Yeah.
People were reluctant to come out to big crowds. So it was like, instead of playing in a little bar to 80 people, we were playing to 30 people. And it just kind of, it started to build, and it's getting back to normal now, all these years later. But it's taken a long time to get to that point. You know, we played some really good shows this year, for sure. I'm really thankful for a lot of it, but it took from 2020 to the beginning of 2023, it was from no shows to really small shows. And now it's starting to build back up.
Yeah, I think that's basically been the way it's been over here as well. I've noticed that my local scene has kind of got a lot more tight. Like, the bands are more kind of friendly towards each other now, because I think everyone missed it, you know, missed doing it.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a little bit more in the way of like bands getting paid slightly more fairly as well, which is quite nice, because it never used to happen much before. You used to kind of turn up, and if you got paid, it was a bonus. Whereas now it feels like there's regular kind of payments, even for smaller bands now, which is quite nice. I feel like people are valuing live music a little bit more now, especially in my area.
Yeah, no, I can see that for sure. You know, I mean, venues that have a cover charge or tickets, they've been paying us decently for sure. And then there's venues that don't have charge, you know, it's a free show, so they give you out of the bar. That all depends on
how many people are drinking.
how many people are drinking. Yeah, exactly.
And their
appetite. We got paid. Exactly. Yeah. But you know, there is a definite sense of community in our scene at the moment, you know, like, and we haven't had too much of a problem over the years of bands not really, you know, being competitive or being weird here. I mean, it does happen sometimes. It's usually some metal band crossing their arms, you know, like, whatever, you know, you know, but most people are pretty, you know, cool with each other in the scene, you know, like, and the bands help each other out, you know, especially on Whidbey Island, such a small homegrown place. There's no, there's not that many bands, you know, like, you know, I could literally count them on fucking, there's seven bands right now on Whidbey Island.
So it's always, yeah, like, you know, it's always that, but I like that. I like the community vibe. Over here, it feels like there's almost like a band on every single street. That's how it feels over here. But so there's a lot of competition, but
yeah,
it feels like people are, yeah, slightly more friendly than they used to be. Again, there used to be a lot of that. They'd turn up and they'd sit there, impress me, you know, and now it's right. They get a little bit more involved, which is always good. But what I love about all these conversations that I have with people from wherever they are in the world, it always sounds like music people are the same kind of people wherever you go. And
yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, the scene over there is just as welcoming and kind of positive and thriving as it is over here.
Yeah, no, I love it here.
So what's coming up next then? So you released an album earlier on. Was it this year or was it last year? Sorry.
The last album came out last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and
we put out a lot of stuff since then, but I mean, like EPs, we have a fuck, I don't even know, but we put out so much records all the time. So what we did, just constant content. We just came out with the split with Octocados and Costa Rica. Before that, I think we did two EPs. Seven and a single, or, you know, like, since the album's come out, I think there's been like nine releases.
Right.
So
That's an incredible rate of stuff. I mean, it's well over 100 releases over the band's career. Like,
yeah,
you say you've got music going around in your head all the time, and obviously that is true. Like, are you the main songwriter in the band?
At the moment, yes. We've had people come and go in this band that have contributed quite a bit on certain records. Out of me, Ken, and Jeff, the three piece that we are now, the core guys, I write almost everything. Ken writes occasionally. But yeah, most of it's me. When we did Sterilize the Stupid and Pop Princess Blues and the name of that album was whatever. when Hans and Corey were in the band, they contributed quite a bit during that time period. Christian Ogden, when he was playing with us, contributed. Yeah, there's a couple songs on Legacy Debauchery and on Test of Time that he wrote. I guess on a percentage level, I write most of it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that begs the question, like, how do you keep coming up with ideas for even the kind of fun titles and especially like the lyrics and stuff? Like, it takes me an age to write a song.
That's my hardest thing for writing is lyrics, for sure, because I feel like I've already said fucking everything. You know, I mean, mind you, our shitty situations in life give me new lyrical content all the time, but it's just a new name to another shitty situation. It's like, you know, it's like going back to like fucking talking about the early 80s hardcore punk bands talking about Ronald Reagan. The story hasn't fucking changed. It's just a new phase.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's fucking stupid, but it's the truth, you know, like, so I guess lyrically that's the hardest thing for me is writing lyrics. I can do it for sure. I do it. We put out albums, right? But it's more of a process. Music comes to me like fucking that. And give me a guitar, I'll write a song for you right now.
Man, if only I had that kind of brain. I just don't have it. But I've got good people around me who do write good riffs. So I'm lucky there.
That's good.
It's amazing. The output that's come out. Like I said, I've listened to a bunch of it. I've nowhere near scratching the surface, I feel like. But yeah, so what's next? You know, what have you got, any new music in the pipeline, or is it literally, you know?
Oh yeah.
It sounds like you're always recording. Do you record a lot at home, or is it all remote?
We have friends that have studios that we end up in their studio. I don't know, 10 times a year or something we're in the studio. And if we're doing a split record with somebody, we're not as concerned about doing writing new material for it, because it's, you know, we're doing 500 seven inches, yada, yada, yada. So we'll do a re-recording of an old song or something like that. Occasionally put in a new song on it. But like right now we've got a split with Punic from Japan coming up. That's in the pipeline. And we have an EP coming out. That comes with a comic book. It's pretty rad. It's just CD, slide in the comic book, boom, pretty cool. So that's the next in line that I'm working on right now. I don't know. There's talk of some UK bands doing a splits with us before we do this tour. But it's just in the talking stage. We'll see how that kind of pans out. Altocados, that split we just did with that band from Costa Rica, they're coming up here to tour with us in fall next year. Down the west coast of the United States. And I think that there's a couple bands that they know that are interested in doing stuff with us too. So I'm kind of playing it out. You know, I usually, honestly, I set up more plans that could possibly than could possibly happen. And that way, when something happens, I'm fucking stoked, right? Like, let's just do a split with every fucking band I know. One of them's giving me tracks. One of them's going to help me out. You know, like when I'm going to help them, they're going to help me. It's going to be perfect. You know what I mean? Like, so that's how I've always done it. That's how we have so many fucking records out. And there was a long time where, because of our kids and our lives, various legal problems and yada, 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 we weren't able to tour a lot for a period of time. So I just dumped all my energy into putting out records and splits with bands constantly. If I can't go out there and sell records and tour and do that thing, then I wanted those fucking bands that were touring. Here's a split with us. That's still getting our name out. That's a cool piece of wax. They have something out of it. We get something out of it. You know what I mean? And we've done that a lot. I mean, we did splits with DOA, the Accused, the Farth, or not the Farth, but the Fang, fucking the Dwarves. Yep. Yeah. One with the Dwarves, with DI. I love DI. I don't know. There's a fucking bunch of bands. The list goes on. It's just, you know, like our Millions of Dead Cops split. Yeah. That's been pressed like 9 times now or something. And, you know, it's, and that was kind of the idea. It was just like, I can't tour. We couldn't tour as much as our peers did. So I just dumped as much money as I could into fucking throwing up, putting out records and splits with bands that I knew that were touring all the time. And it worked.
That's incredible. How do those kind of things come about? Is that just emailing guys or like?
Most of the time it's because we were playing a show with them and then I'd end up fucking housing them at my house. We'd have a good time. We'd talk about it. And next thing I know, I'd have tracks. Sometimes it's just an email. Like when we did, I helped put together the series, Shut the Fuck Up and Listen. It's a series of 7-inch compilations.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were designed specifically to have little bands like my sister's band, the Skeksis, right? Little garage band. No one knows who they are outside of where we live, right? Yeah. They were a band at that time. And I put them on a record with the fucking Misfits. You know what I mean? Like, so my idea was that I'd get a hold of these rock star bands. Most of them might say no. Some of them might say yes. And they did. So I started getting tracks sent to me from bigger bands. And I just put them together with the smaller bands. And it worked out to be a really cool series. And that's kind of how I've been looking at it. You can't, every band out there, if you don't try, the answer's no, right?
Absolutely.
If you ask, you might get a yes. You might not. But what's it going to hurt to ask?
Yeah. That's that, you know? And that's a way to kind of, I think, people don't realize how easy it is to just ask a question, whether or not you get the answer. You never know, right, like you say, until you try. And it sounds like you've had more, probably it seems like maybe more yeses than nos, but I'd imagine probably not, because that's not often the way it works, you know?
Well, also, I mean, a lot of the bigger bands, you have to go through their management team and blah, blah, blah. And that's a pain in the ass before you even talk to somebody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you might not even get a response at that point, right? But I've gotten plenty of responses. I'm on a lot of records, a lot of bands I really love growing up. I mean, I'm on compilations with fucking, like I said, the Misfits, fucking the Subhumans, you know, Against All Authority, Citizen Fish, fucking, you know, the list is so big, I don't even want to fucking go into it. And it's all because of that. So it's just trying. It's like fucking, you know, you play with a band like TSOL or something, talk to them. Your band opens up for fucking NOFX, talk to them. Like, you know, I mean, it's, you know, you're getting a break in one way, try to see what you can do with the next. That's not just for you. Don't make it about you. You know, that's why I do compilations and not just splits all the time. It's about opening up the scene, about fucking bringing us together, getting the little fucking band that's a garage band that's 16 years old and putting them on a record with DOA. You know what I mean? Like, those are, that's a way to help your entire scene grow and not just you.
This is it. It's all about community. All about community. I mean, my first ever band got back together in 2021 after like 15 years away. And we started putting on our own shows this year and trying to get a group of musicians and a group of bands together and really trying to create a community. And we've got a little group of maybe 7 or 8 bands in the local area now that we know that we can call on at any time. And I really like that. You know, I mean, you know, we're not on the same level as like trying to get bigger bands involved, but certainly when you start building something, the potential is there, you know? And yeah, I think that's really inspiring.
That's how it should be. It's just, you know, punk rock was supposed to be homegrown from the begin with. I mean, now it might sell out stadiums, you know, the Misfits plays Madison Square Garden and sells it out in 5 minutes. Right. I understand that it grew into something much bigger. But on the underground do-it-yourself scene level, there's no reason for competition. I know there's bands that are better than other bands, but the bands that aren't as good as those, they're still fucking up there kicking ass and doing what they do. And they deserve recognition for what they're doing. Every time you put on your boots and get on that fucking stage, you're putting your life on the line. Every time you drive to the next show, every time you do everything, We live for this moment. Life's about now. It's not about fucking, it's not about making plans for tomorrow or yesterday. It's about fucking what you're doing in the moment. And fucking, if you don't seize that, what the fuck are you doing? We only live once. I'm going to be dead in 20 years. You know what I mean? Fucking do something with yourself, you know, like, and help anyone you can on your way out.
Jason, that's amazing. I had a couple of extra questions to ask, but I feel like that's an excellent point to end on. Do you know, like, it just feels like that's an excellent way to kind of live your life. And it's something to leave everyone listening on, I feel like.
Okay, good.
So what I'm going to say, one last final thing, where can people find Potbelly if they want to follow them and listen to the music?
Oh fuck. Well, Pig Records, the label we're signed to, has us all over all their fucking social media. So you can go to like Pig Records Rocks, the website. You can go to fucking Pig Records Bandcamp, their YouTube channel. It's PIG, Porno Entertainment Group, with an I. But I mean, really, honestly, because the name Potbelly is also a pig and a fucking stove, and there's been two other bands that have popped up called Potbelly over the years. If you type in Potbelly Punk in any Google bar, you'll find a giant list of shit and just have fun with the rabbit hole.
Dive in. That's excellent. I can wholeheartedly recommend it as well, because that's what I've been doing the last couple of weeks in preparation for this anyway. And awesome. For playing with you guys this year, should I say. In a few months' time. Jason, thank you so much for talking to me today. And hopefully I'll see you in a couple of months. I'm going to press stop on the record, but don't go anywhere just yet. There you go. What an interesting and thoughtful guy Jason is. Who knows how he does everything he does, but I'm really glad to have met him and had this chat. He's really inspired me to up my game in my local scene, and I hope some of the things he spoke about have struck a chord with you too, especially about community building and looking out for each other in these crazy times. Again, you can find Potbelly by visiting pig-record.rocks/potbelly and on Facebook, as well as on Bandcamp and the other streaming sites. And remember, if you search for them, look for the logo with the scary-looking cartoon pig. I'll pop what links I can find in the show notes. Thank you for listening as ever, and until next time, take very good care of yourselves. Thank you for listening to this episode of Band Biographies. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts. Please do reach out on Twitter @BandBiogs, Instagram @BandBiographies, search on Facebook for Band Biographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. See you next time.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.